Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas and Go at the Y, and Gas and Go at Mill Bay.
It's nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is mostly cloudy and breezy. 46 degrees. Out at the airport, they are showing 73% humidity, west winds to 21, gusting to 30, and 10 miles of visibility. They're calling for sunny skies for the rest of the day with a high near 47, northwest winds to 25, gusting to 30. Rain starting late tonight after 4 a.m. and continuing to about 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. High near 47 tomorrow, southerly winds to 5. Coming up on the Midday Report, Senate and House candidates debated at Alaska Federation of Natives Convention on Saturday.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The United Kingdom is waiting to see if third time's a charm. Former Chancellor Rishi Sunak has become the third leader of the governing Conservative Party in 7 weeks. Once King Charles formally accepts Prime Minister Liz Truss's resignation, he is expected to appoint Sunak as head of His Majesty's government tomorrow.
It is the greatest privilege of my life to be able to serve the party I love and give back to the country I owe so much to.
Less than 2 months ago, Sunak was bested by Truss in the race to lead the Conservative Party, but with the UK facing rising inflation, Truss's government soon imploded over a tax cut plan that threw the markets into turmoil. At 45 days, Truss's tenure became the shortest in British history, and today history was made again when Sunak, a Hindu of South Asian descent, whose parents immigrated from East Africa to Britain decades ago, became the first person of color to become Prime Minister of Britain. Jury selection is underway in New York in the Manhattan criminal trial of former President Donald Trump's company. NPR's Andrea Bernstein reports the court's casting a wide net in its search for 18 impartial jurors.
Some 130 prospective jurors showed up for questioning in a trial that charges the Trump Organization engaged in a persistent pattern of fraud to pay less taxes on corporate benefits. Some jurors have already said it would be difficult for them to participate based on the trial's projected length of about 6 weeks. The rest are now being questioned individually by prosecutors. Former Chief Financial Officer Alan Weisselberg already pleaded guilty to multiple fraud charges and is expected to be a major witness in this case against the company. Donald Trump is not a defendant in the criminal trial, though he does face a separate civil fraud case brought by the New York Attorney General. Andrea Bernstein, NPR News, New York.
Russian and Ukrainian leaders are accusing one another of standing in the way of Ukrainian grain exports on the Black Sea. There's a backlog of more than 150 ships waiting around Istanbul, Turkey. From Kyiv, NPR's Yulian Haida reports that the diplomatic standoff comes as the countries are set to renegotiate terms of a deal to keep the grain flowing.
Over the last month, Russian President Vladimir Putin has made all sorts of claims about Ukraine's grain exports, that the countries receiving grain aren't the ones who need it, or that Ukraine's supposed role in bombing the strategic Crimean Bridge voids any diplomacy. Since July, Ukraine and Russia have agreed to let Turkish authorities ensure grain shipments safely leave Ukrainian seaports. That deal was only temporary, though. It's up for renegotiation in about a month, and Ukrainian authorities say that Russia is setting the stage to stop Ukrainian grain from reaching famine-stricken countries. Ukraine's agriculture ministry says it's only just been able to export enough to prevent last year's harvest from rotting. Yulian Haida, NPR News, Kyiv.
You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Alaska's top U.S. Senate candidates found one point of agreement on Saturday, the need to protect Arctic Alaska from foreign aggression. At the Alaska Federation of Natives Candidate Forum in Anchorage, Senator Lisa Murkowski said Russian President Vladimir Putin won't limit his bad behavior to Europe.
He's got one hand on Ukraine and he's got the other on the Arctic.
Murkowski said she'd spoken to the two asylum seekers who fled eastern Russia by boat and landed on Alaska's St. Lawrence Island early this month. She revealed that they are indigenous Siberians who were afraid they'd be drafted to fight in Ukraine.
It is very clear to me that these individuals were in fear, so much in fear of their own government, that they risked their lives and took a 15-foot skiff across those open waters. That says a lot.
As for countering the threat, Murkowski recited a long list of items she'd helped fund, like new icebreakers, an Arctic security center, and work on a bigger port for Nome. Her Republican rival, Kelly Chewbacca, spoke about the threat from both Russia and China. She's an attorney who's worked in the inspector general offices of several agencies and in the office of the Director of National Intelligence.
So with that background, I'm the only candidate up here who has the subject matter experience and the relationships in the national security community to successfully advocate for an expanded defense in order to strengthen our readiness and preparedness in the Arctic.
The U.S. Senate race is mostly between the two Republicans. Chewbacca is endorsed by the Alaska Republican Party and former President Donald Trump. Murkowski is one of Trump's biggest targets, but a committee associated with Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is backing Murkowski and funding attack ads that Chewbacca objects to.
That is fundamentally un-American. It is an absolute desecration of democracy.
Later on Saturday, AFN delegates approved a resolution endorsing Murkowski's re-election. Well, there was no doubt who the crowd favorite was at the Alaska Federation of Natives Candidate Forum for the U.S. House on Saturday. Attendees cheered and waved photos of Mary Peltola, the first Alaska Native person to serve in Congress. Former Governor Sarah Palin said, "This is the toughest campaign she's ever fought.
Because of her, Mary is..." And we are in Mary's house, and I know that. Love her dearly. I'm as proud of her as all of you are.
Palin says she thinks Peltola is doing a good job filling the remainder of the late Congressman Don Young's term. But Peltola is a Democrat. Palin is a Republican and says Alaska needs to help Republicans win back control of the House. Still, Palin didn't show the same warmth for the other Republican on stage with her, Nick Begich. Begich said one of his top goals is to, quote, "make the business case for Alaska," close quote. On a question about disparities in mental health, Begich saw an economic angle.
"We have to make sure that we have job opportunities and long-term community development plans in order for people to know, youth specifically, that they have a career and a purpose."
Palin also made the link between jobs and mental health.
"God created us to work."
Peltola cited a panoply of factors that she says support mental health: housing, education, nutrition, and telehealth care. She mentioned a treatment program in the Yukon-Kuskokwim region that gets people outdoors.
"And this isn't just for Alaska Natives. This is for everybody. Anybody from around the nation can access this kind of treatment. And what better treatment is there than being in the outdoors and connecting with our wildlife and sharing with our elders?"
The forum ended on a lighter note with questions about, among other things, a favorite traditional food made of berries and whipped fat or vegetable shortening. AFN delegates later officially endorsed Peltola in the U.S. House race.
"Have you had a gudeg this week?"
"It wasn't anybody's birthday, so not this week, no."
I've actually had it 3 times.
A half-century-old plan to connect Metlakatla and Ketchikan's power grids took a big step forward on Thursday. Ketchikan City Council voted unanimously to allow Metlakatla Power and Light to purchase power from the city-run utility and vice versa. But as KRBD's Eric Stone reports, it's another kind of connection that has the head of Metlakatla's utility especially excited.
For Metlakatla, today is a big day.
Metlakatla Mayor Albert Smith addressed Ketchikan's City Council, underscoring the historic significance of the agreement to connect the two communities' power grids.
We've been working on this project for decades, and on our side, the land-based electric lines are in place. But the most important thing, the foundation of making it all work, is the power purchase agreement in front of you.
The agreement is just a few pieces of paper. There's still the multi-million-dollar, 2-mile-long undersea cable to fund, build, and bring online, but officials on both sides of Nichols Passage see it as a big step towards making the electrical intertie a reality. Smith told the council that connecting the grids would benefit both communities.
Through this agreement, both of our communities have access to backup power when needed. We both can reduce our reliance on diesel use, and we both have opportunities to sell excess power when available. It's truly a win-win for both of us, and it makes our region stronger and more resilient.
The council unanimously praised the project. Councilmember Abby Bradbury thanked senior city officials for getting the agreement over the finish line after 57 years of discussions and false starts.
This has been talked about for a while. I knew about it before I sat here. It's exciting to see that it's actually being executed.
It's not clear when the grids will actually be connected. Acting Ketchikan Public Utilities Electric Division Manager Jeremy Bynum estimates it'll be at least a couple of years. In an interview, Metlakatla Power and Light Board Chair Kehlani Booth applauded the council's decision. Booth says it's not just a step towards improving Metlakatla's electrical grid. He says it would also vastly improve internet service in the Annette Islands Reserve.
They're both one cable, the broadband and the electricity.
Booth says Metlakatla is awaiting a decision on its application for roughly $11 million in federal grants to partially fund the cable. It's part of a program funded by last year's bipartisan infrastructure law that funds telecommunications infrastructure for tribal communities.
We're hoping to hear any day now. Checking my phone every day.
Once the internet connection is up and running, Booth says that'll make a big difference for Metlakatla residents, students, and business owners. He says it'll drive down rates and bring Metlakatla's internet connections up to today's standards. And he says faster internet could have a wide variety of benefits. For one, it could help cut down on costly medical travel.
The biggest portion of people that we have on our island are elderly. And, you know, you've got people that have diabetes, you know, and cancer patients and stuff like that. So it makes it really important for the telehealth to work well. And if we had good internet and someone could take vitals and do all those things in real time, you know, then people aren't having to go to Anchorage possibly.
He says improving infrastructure in Metlakatla could also help stem the flow of people out of the region.
We've got to make it a priority to try to keep people here in Ketchikan and Metlakatla and Prince of Wales. And if we've all got to tackle, you know, our bills and work together to make sure everybody could afford life here. Because I believe this is our piece of paradise, and we need to try to hold on to it.
Ketchikan City Council is scheduled to take a final vote on the power sales agreement next month. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Federal investigators say they found holes in the floats of two small planes that crashed on Alaska waterways in the past month, leaving both pilots dead. The National Transportation Safety Board released preliminary reports of the crashes on Thursday. The first crash happened on September 25th. The NTSB report says Janelle Rude planned to fly from Whiskey Lake near Squintna to Lake Hood in Anchorage, but she never arrived. A rescue team later recovered her body from the Cessna 180 submerged at Whiskey Lake. The NTSB's Alaska chief, Clint Johnson, says investigators found 7 holes in the Cessna's floats, including a large one that had been patched twice.
There was a pretty good size, plate size, dinner platter size hole in that float, and the floats were in pretty tough shape as far as corrosion and pitting.
The second crash occurred October 5th at the Chena Marina airstrip near Fairbanks, killing pilot and wilderness guide Gerald Stansel. NTSB investigators say Stansel was seen loading a generator and numerous pieces of gear into his Cessna 185 before making an aborted takeoff run. A witness said, quote, "The floats were almost completely submerged," unquote, before the plane taxied for another attempt and then suddenly flipped over. Witnesses tried to save Stansel, but shifting cargo pinned him in the plane underwater. NTSB investigators later found two holes in the front of each of the plane's floats. Johnson says they appear to be left over from a replaced set of bumpers to soften impacts against docks.
Where the airplane was loaded to the point where those holes were submerged, and we're theorizing at this point right now that that's probably how the water got into the forward compartments of the floats.
Both Stansel and Rude were the only people aboard their planes. Johnson says the fact that both planes had holes in the floats has caught investigators' attention.
You know, that's our job, is to look at how accidents took place, find out the circumstances and the sequence of events, and then make recommendations to keep it from happening again. Will there be a recommendations that come out of this? Can't tell you at this point right now, but we do want to at least get the word out.
Both crashes remain under investigation. A North Pole woman is keeping her dogs away from a neighborhood gravel pit after a northern pike attacked one of them last month. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Longtime North Pole resident Shannon Daunt says it was a warm September day when she stopped to let her two dogs cool off at the neighborhood gravel pit.
This is over off of Copper Street, off Dennis Road in North Pole. Never had any instance of trouble, or it's been our popular little spot for years, but not anymore.
Daunt says her Chihuahua Mulan luckily wanted nothing to do with the water, but her husky greyhound mix Murphy went down to the edge.
And out of nowhere, bam, here's this big old huge fish, which I didn't know what it was. I have found out since that it's a northern pike. But the thing was probably, which I've heard now, is a small one, 3 feet, hanging off his muzzle, you know. And he starts shaking his head, and this thing is holding on.
Daunt says Murphy pushed the toothed fish off with a paw, but then the pike bit his leg.
Long enough to get, you know, some really good teeth in there.
Daunt says Murphy was able to get free, and the fish flopped back into the water. She says she got Murphy home, where he proceeded to bleed heavily.
He just bled everywhere.
Daunt has photos of her home that look like something from a slasher movie. She says Murphy wouldn't let her help, but the wounds, although numerous, were small and shallow, and Murphy licked them until the bleeding stopped. He's fully recovered from the attack, and Daunt says she's since spent some time researching northern pike.
Looked at them online, and number one, they're gnarly, and number two, they get huge.
Pike are pretty prehistoric fish. You know, they don't really have brains. They're programmed to eat, right?
State fisheries biologist Klaus Wuttig says he's never heard of a pike biting a dog.
It is surprising, but it's not surprising, because pike are pretty renowned for hitting baby ducks, voles on the surface. And so the dog snout, could that activate a pike to strike? Surely, you know. Pike are lion weight predators, right? Just like an alligator. So the dog was just the wrong place at the wrong time, you know.
Wuttig says he's been bitten by a pike a few times, and it's important to pry their jaws open rather than try to pull away, as the fish have hundreds of tiny teeth that can result in a lot of cuts. Daunt has a video a friend shot of a pike, possibly the same one that bit her dog Murphy, going after a beaver in the gravel pit. She says nobody's been able to catch the fish. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
Read diverse, read indie on Insight Daily Radio. Conversations with today's most influential authors from the world of independent publishing. Author Robert Carlyle Taylor's award-winning debut novel, The First Robot President, combines science fiction with political satire, making fun of Democrats and Republicans in equal measure. The novel centers around Thomas Jenkins, a lobbyist, and his robot wife, whose political ambitions land her on the Green Party's 25-20 presidential ticket. Taking a subtle yet savage swipe at the current political climate, Taylor weaves in a political satire with much food for thought on environmental concerns, poverty, and war. We spoke with him about this intriguing and entertaining book.
I was actually working, putting notes down for a different book, and had done a lot of work on that when I happened to see something on the internet. They showed a robot being developed, I think it was in Japan. Somebody in Japan, a company or a person, had designed a robot that looked like a human being. It looked like a woman, and in fact, a very beautiful woman, and extremely intelligent. And so that got me thinking, where is this technology going to take us? If we have this kind of technology here today, what's the technology going to be like 500 years from now? You know, could a robot be president?
That's award-winning author Robert Carlyle Taylor on his novel, The First Robot President, which is available wherever books are sold. Read Diverse, Read Indie is presented by the Independent Book Publishers Association.
Are you planning to vote in the November 8th general election? If so, your voting location might have changed since you last voted. That's why it's important to make sure you have a voting plan before Election Day on November 8th. Can't make it? Request a by-mail ballot by October 29th or make a plan to vote early in person. Visit elections.alaska.gov to find your polling place and more. This message paid for by the Alaska State Division of Elections.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 24th day of October, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 9:05. It will set again at 6:41. That will give us 9 hours and 36 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 48 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 17 degrees, set in 1967, and a record high was 60, set in 1929. Currently 46 degrees, mostly cloudy and quite breezy. Out at the airport, they are registering steady westerly winds at 21 miles per hour, gusting to 30, as well as 73% humidity and 10 miles of visibility. Sunny skies for the rest of the day, high near 47, northwest winds gusting to 30. Rain tonight, or tomorrow morning early anyway, 5 a.m. it's expected to begin, and kind of slack off at about 11 a.m. tomorrow morning. Low around 36 overnight tonight with westerly winds to 15, gusting to 25. For tomorrow, look for a high of about 47, southeast winds to 5, cloudy skies. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up this afternoon at 1:53 p.m., about a half hour. That will be a 9.3-foot tide here on the east side, followed by a low tide at 8:15 p.m. of -0.3. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 2:28 this afternoon and be 15.5 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 8:52 of -1.1 feet. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Gale warning for today and tomorrow. West winds 35 knots today, except west 25 knots north of Dangerous Cape, seas to 12 feet. For tonight, west 25, seas to 11 feet. And for tomorrow, southwest 25, increasing to 35 tomorrow afternoon, seas building to 15 feet tomorrow afternoon. And for Tuesday night, west winds to 40 knots, seas to 18 feet. For Wednesday, west 50, seas to 21 feet. 21 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through Tuesday. For today, west winds to 30 knots, seas to 6 feet. For tonight, west 25, seas to 5 feet. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, south 20, becoming southwest 30 tomorrow afternoon, seas 5 feet, building to 9 feet tomorrow afternoon. And for Tuesday night, southwest 30, seas to 10 feet in the Shelikof. Please join the Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center over on Near Island for a community potluck to share stories and observations about how you've noticed how harvesting has changed over the years in Kodiak. That's happening tomorrow, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Please bring a dish to share. Local and traditional foods, as well as delicious foods, are strongly encouraged. For more information, call 907-486-1360. But again, that's tomorrow, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., a community potluck. Bring a delicious dish and be prepared to share stories and observations about how you've noticed how harvesting has changed over the years in Kodiak. That's happening at the Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center over on Near Island tomorrow. Also tomorrow, Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center's annual prayer vigil to honor and remember domestic violence victims who have died in the last year and in previous years at the hands of their abusers. That's happening tomorrow at the St. James the Fisherman Episcopal Church, beginning at 5:30 p.m. That will be followed by a dinner at 6:30 p.m. and the annual membership meeting at 7 p.m., which should include by 8 p.m. RSVPs are requested so they can make enough food. Please contact them at 907-486-6171 or email them at contact@kwrcc.org. Everyone in the community is invited and welcome to attend both events. The Kodiak City Council will be having a work session tomorrow. That's happening at 7:30 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library. They will also be having a regular meeting on Thursday, also at 7:30 p.m. in the Public Library. Both meetings are open to the public, and public members are encouraged to tune in right here at KMXT on 100.1 FM. The meeting will also be web-streamed, and web-streaming links for both meetings and meeting packets are available at the City of Kodiak website. If you need printed meeting materials or more information, contact the City Clerk at 907-486-8636. The Senior Citizens of Kodiak will be having their regular Board of Directors meeting on Thursday. That's happening at 1 p.m. in the Center's Multipurpose Room. The meeting's open to the public. For more information, call the Senior Center at 907-486-6181. The Downtown Kodiak Revitalization Special Committee is having another meeting. That's happening Friday, beginning at 9:30 a.m. in the Kodiak Public Library. This meeting's open to the public. Meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. It will also be web-streamed from that same site. For more information, call the clerk at 486-8636. Also on Friday, the City Ports and Harbor Advisory Board will be having their meeting. That's happening at 12 noon in Fisherman's Hall. The meeting is open to the public. Agendas and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. It will also be web-streamed from that same site. For more information about this meeting, call the City Harbor Department at 907-486-8080. Don't forget, downtown businesses will be hosting the annual Downtown Trick-or-Treat on Friday. That's happening from 3:30 to 5 p.m. All of Kodiak's goblins, ghouls, and other trick-or-treaters are invited to wander through participating businesses looking for treats. Be sure to stop by the Shunack Tribal Center first for a trick-or-treat bag, and the Key Club will also be providing crossing guards. You can download a map of participating businesses at Kodiak Chamber. .org. But again, that starts at 3:30 to 5 p.m. Friday.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181. Access at 1-800-486-2733 or email psa@kmxt.org.